Welcome to Animal Companions. This is Joyce, your Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading another chapter from Smells Like Pirates by Suzanne Selfors, and if we have some time, I'll be reading some articles and newsletters about the animals in our lives. We're going to start today's readings with Smells Like Pirates by Suzanne Selfors. In the last chapter, we learned that the entire crew sailed out to find the treasure, to find the submarine battery almost unable to work because it had been hitting a number of jellyfish that just clogged up the engine. So now the crew has no way to get to the island to find Smeller's treasure. Well, we'll have to figure out just what's going on there as we read chapter 29. Captain Conrad's Chest. It took a few minutes to find the emergency backup on the submarine battery. As soon as Homer pulled the switch, the overhead lights flickered, and then they glowed. The yellow and white jellyfish that were pressed against the windshield, their gelatinous bodies undulating, their tentacles creeping along the glass. It reminded Homer of the moths that were drawn into his bedroom window at night. "Do you think they've attracted to the submarine because of its light?" he asked. "Well, maybe. Let's turn the lights off and see if they go away," Lorelei suggested. So Homer turned off the emergency battery, and they sat in the dark for a little while. It was pitch black down there, and it was absolutely creepy. "Without power, the oxygen generator doesn't work," Hercules whispered, as if he didn't want to disturb the jellyfish, or as if whispering a terrible truth made it sound less terrible. "What if we run out of oxygen?" Well, this possibility hadn't occurred to Homer. Run out of oxygen? He reached for Dog and found a warm ear. He ran his hand down Dog's back and pulled him close. "Maybe we should turn the battery back on," he said. "Give it a few more minutes," Lorelei said. "We need to get rid of those jellyfish." "We can't survive without oxygen," Hercules said, followed by a soft puff of his inhaler. "My throat feels like it's closing up. Does anyone else feel that way?" Another puff. "Do you think we're running out already?" Homer's throat began to feel a little weird, too, but it was probably because he had his face buried in Dog's neck and he'd inhaled a few stray dog hairs. "That always happens. Let's turn it back on," he said. "Thanks a lot, Hercules. All your worrying is making me worry," Lorelei said. "Fine, turn the battery back on." Homer gladly switched on the emergency battery and the interior lit up. "Crud," he said, as he looked at the undulating blanket of yellow and white that was still pressed against the window. "Why won't they go away?" Lorelei asked. "They seem to like us," Hercules said. An unsettled sensation tickled Homer's stomach. "Hey, we're rising," he said. As the upper half of the submarine surfaced, the jellyfish slid down the windshield until they covered only the submerged half of the window. Night had fallen. A full moon hung in the sky like a light bulb. The submarine began to rock back and forth with ocean current. The back dot started moving again, but in the wrong direction. "They're pushing us backwards," Homer said. "What?" Lorelei rushed to the console. "We can't go backwards. There isn't enough time to go backwards. We've got to get rid of them." "Hey, wasn't there something in the first aid kit about jellyfish?" Hercules rummaged through the red metal box. "Here it is." He held up a tube. "It's jellyfish pheromones. Maybe we could use this." Homer didn't want to admit that he had no idea what pheromones were. Thankfully, Lorelei did it for him. "I have no idea what ferrothingarines are," she said. "Pheromones are chemicals that are released by animals," Hercules explained. "Pharo is Greek, and it means to carry. The chemicals carry a scent that can be smelled by others in the same species, and the scent makes them behave differently. I think it's used for mating majorly, I think. It's pretty cool when you think about it." "Oh, so the scent will attract the jellyfish?" Lorelei leaned close to Homer and whispered. "Kind of like the scent of treasure attracting, you know who?" Homer thought about this for a moment. So if we squirt that tube into the water, then the jellyfish will stop liking us, and they will like the scent instead, and we can get rid of them? He grabbed the tube from Hercules, climbed the conning tower, and opened the hatch. Fresh, salty air rushed in, filling the interior like a cool drink of water. Homer stuck his head out the hatch. The ocean churned, rocking the submarine from side to side. Waves rolled over the deck. A sour taste filled his mouth. He'd have to do this quickly, or he'd get seasick for sure. After uncapping the tube, he stepped onto the top rung and tossed the pheromones. The sea quickly swallowed the little tube. Homer closed the hatch and rejoined the others at the observation window. The effect was immediate. Tentacles trembled, then a quiver ran across the jellyfish, reminding Homer of his visits to the ballpark when everyone stood up and did the wave. The giant blobs released their grip on the submarine, and they swam away. "We did it!" Lorelei cried. Soon after that, they submerged again and started racing along at hyper speed. Homer and Lorelei sat at the helm, studying Rumpold's map. "I'm hungry," Hercules announced that he was wandering into the supply locker. "Bring me a couple of energy bars," Lorelei said, "and some water." Now that they weren't bobbing on the surface, Homer's stomach had settled back to normal. "Is there anything other than energy bars?" he asked, trying not to imagine what his mother might be making for dinner. As shuffling sounded from inside the locker, Homer tried not to think about creamy macaroni and cheese or roast beef with tender red potatoes and gravy. "A dry energy bar will be delicious," he told himself. It was certainly better than having to eat sand flea soup, which had been the main dinner course during many a treasure-hunting expedition. Lorelei mumbled as she read the riddle. "Behind saliva hides what you seek." She scratched her upturned nose. "Saliva? How do you hide a treasure behind saliva? That's just weird." "Guys," Hercules called from inside the supply locker, "I think I found something." A screeching sound filled the sub as Hercules dragged a large wooden chest from the closet. Dog shot to his paws and galloped toward the chest. His nose quivering, he circled the chest, sniffing every square inch. Hercules fiddled with the padlock. "Dog, move your nose. I'm trying to open this thing." Hercules gave Dog a gentle push, but Dog pushed back, squeezing between Hercules and the chest. His tail wagged furiously as he stuck his nose right up against the lock and sniffed. The chest was inside a metal locker. It's got the initials C.I.C. on it. "Do you think that stands for Captain Ignatius Conrad?" Hercules pushed Dog again. "Hey, why is Dog sniffing this thing he can't smell?" "Smell?" Homer and Lorelei blurted out. The map flew into the air as Homer and Lorelei leaped on their feet and out of their seats like Olympic athletes in a long jump competition. Arms reaching and fingers twitching, each tried to get to the chest before the other. Lorelei, being the swifter of the two, threw herself over the chest, but Homer, having a bit more weight, knocked her off with a shoulder butt. "What's the matter with you two?" Hercules gasped. He scooted away as they started wrestling like a couple of first graders fighting over the last cupcake. "Someone's going to get hurt." Lorelei clutched the padlock, but Homer grabbed her around the waist and pulled her away from the chest. "It's not yours," he said with a groan. "It belonged to my Uncle Drake. Let's go of it. Let go of it. I want to see what's inside." She kicked his kneecap. Pain shot up his leg, and he fell backwards, smacking his shoulder against the seaweed processing biofuel unit. "Finders, keepers," she said as she grabbed the padlock. Homer was sick and tired of finders keepers. He took a huge breath and lunged at Lorelei. They rolled onto the ground, where he pinned her as Hercules watched in silent confusion. "Madam stole it from my uncle," Homer said, his chest heaving with short breaths. "I'm not going to let you steal it from me. I know you're working for her." Lorelei stopped struggling. She narrowed her eyes. "What are you talking about?" I heard Madam when she was in the lair, Homer said, tightening the grip on Lorelei's wrists. She was talking to Torch on the flat screen. She said she'd sent you to get the map from me. She said she told you to work with Torch and Gertrude. Lorelei's expression softened. Okay, so what? She sent me to get the map, but I didn't give it to her. I kept it. You're working for Madam? Hercules asked. No, I just pretend to work for her, Lorelei cringed. Homer, you're hurting me. Tell us the truth. Tell us the truth, Homer insisted, not releasing his grips. I am telling you the truth, she cringed again. Why would I work with Madam? She double-crossed me before, remember? She tried to feed me to the tortoise. I'm working with you. It's lost and found together. Now let go of me, please. Homer let go, then scooted between Lorelei and the captain's chest. Lorelei sat up. Her pink hair was all messed up from their fight. Her face was still covered in scratches from the hot air balloon disaster. Homer was equally a mess, with a collection of scratches and a thin layer of green goo spread over his toxic rash. Lorelei rubbed her wrists and stared at him with a sad pout. He felt a bit bad for hurting her. His sister, Gwendolyn, had spent a fair amount of time pinning him to the ground, torturing him with tickles, or by dangling squirrel guts in his face. Being pinned down was a terrible, helpless feeling. "Sorry I hurt you," he said quietly. "Homer," Hercules asked, "what should we do? Should we open it?" "I don't think so," Homer said. "Not with her here." Lorelei folded her arms. "Oh, I see what's happening. You're thinking of double-crossing me. You're trying to figure out how to push me out of the pact." The pact was to find Rumphold's treasure, not Captain Conrad's chest, Homer said. "This chest belongs to Lost. It was found on a Lost-sponsored quest. The chest was refound on this quest, and our pact covers all treasure we find on this quest." "Refound is not a word," Hercules pointed out. "Whatever," Lorelei grumbled. "The point is, we have a pact, and you're supposed to be a man of your word. Homer," then they stared at each other. "Are you going to break a pact? A sacred agreement in which you've given your word?"
"Maybe," Homer said, though his voice came out small and without conviction.
Lorelei smiled. "You won't break our pact. I know you won't. Honesty is your Achilles' heel." Thunk. "Hey, guys," Hercules said. "What is Dog doing?"
Dog, who'd been sniffing the chest this entire time, had pushed the chest over. The slight impact was all it took to shatter the rusty lock. Lorelei lunged forward and pulled the lid open. A unified sigh of disappointment filled the submarine as the kids stared into the empty chest.
"Nothing," Lorelei grumbled. "Madam took it all."
All that fighting for nothing, Homer thought, his cheeks turning red with embarrassment. But even though it was empty, the chest itself was a valuable artifact. A maritime museum would probably like to have it. After all, Captain Conrad was one of the most famous British naval officers in all of history. Homer was about to tell Lorelei that he still intended to claim it in the name of Lost, but that's when Dog lay on his stomach and pawed at the chest's underside. Dog sniffed and pawed, his tail wagging. "He's still sniffing," Lorelei said with a burst of excitement. "Do you see that, Homer? He's still sniffing."
"Will someone tell me why Dog is sniffing?" Hercules said. "It doesn't make sense."
Homer leaned closer and inspected the place where Dog was scratching. "It looks like there's a secret compartment under here." He patted Dog's head. "Good boy, good boy." Then he wiggled a piece of wood until it slid free. A package lay beneath. Homer carefully lifted it from its snug hiding place. The package was wrapped in some sort of animal skin that had been pounded as a thin paper. The skin felt rubbery. Homer peeled it open. Beneath was a second layer of rubbery skin, then a third layer of silver fur. Holding his breath, he peeled back the fur. A small leather-bound book lay inside. Lorelei didn't try to grab it. Instead, she stared wide-eyed and speechless. "It's in perfect condition," Homer whispered as he turned the book over. "The skin's kept it a watertight seal." "Well, what is it?" Hercules also whispered. It was definitely a whispering kind of moment, for a secret was about to be revealed. The submarine's battery hummed, Dog's tail thwumped, thwumped against the floor. Breaths were held. Carefully, with fingers barely touching the precious leather, Homer opened the first page. He could have sworn that an orchestra swelled at that very moment. Harps sang out, and cymbals clanged, for in lopy handwriting across the page were the following words: "The Diary of Rumphold Smeller, the Pirate." And that's the end of that section, 5, in the book Smells Like Pirates by Suzanne Selfore. Next week, we'll begin Section 6, called The Land of Dragons. Our next reading is from the Guide Dogs of America blog, No Bones About It, On the Trail, Again. To say that hiking is Mary Wilson's favorite pastime is an understatement. The GDB client and outdoor enthusiast is passionate about hiking and has set a goal to become the first blind woman to hike the Appalachian Trail. "Hiking with my guide dog is vital to my mental health and my physical well-being," said Mary. "Having a guide dog has been a life-changing effect. I could never hike without a guide dog, and certainly not the Appalachian Trail." Mary says GDB's support center was incredibly helpful when she wanted advice on how to safely prepare for the trip. Mary and Thor began the Appalachian Trail journey last year in Damascus, Virginia, and headed north. GDB Field Services Manager Will Henry, a guide dog mobility instructor and an avid hiker himself, joined Mary for a 50-mile portion of the trail. "Will has been a huge resource for me, helping me troubleshoot little things if they popped up," said Mary. One of those things was ensuring Mary had the right equipment. "I use a longer guide dog harness handle when I'm hiking than I do for urban work because I often have to walk behind Thor on a narrow trail, and I don't want to injure my shoulder having to extend my arm for long periods of time," said Mary. Mary noted that Will shared his expertise of backpacking, guide dogs, orientation and mobility, and many other things to make their first 50 miles memorable, educational, and safer, noting that she and Thor improved their techniques for water crossings, traversing footbridges with no rails, going through cattle stiles, and managing other unique trail challenges. "I am incredibly grateful for the people like Will who devote their lives to empowering people who are blind or visually impaired through the partnership of a guide dog." Will says he and other GDB field service managers are here to help clients like Mary live the life they want to live. "It was an honor to work with Mary and Thor and be a part of their journey." During the winter of 2023, Mary took a break to be with family. In March of 2024, she hit the trail again, starting at the trail's southern terminus of Amicalola Falls State Park in Georgia. She and Thor have hiked more than 700 miles of the trail. "When the trail or weather gets tough," Mary says, "she just takes her time, and when you hike with a dog, it becomes their hike, not yours," says Mary, noting that Thor's health, safety, and happiness will always be her top priority. Knowing that she would be hiking much of the trail solo, Mary says having Thor with her makes the journey less lonely and gives her peace of mind. "I feel so much safer than with having Thor with me," Mary says, noting that Thor can find things for her when they get back to camp. "I can say to him, 'Find the tent,' and he will take me back to my tent." When she does encounter other hikers on the trail, Mary enjoys sharing the impact GDP has had on her life. "It's been great to educate people on the trail about what a person who's blind can do, especially when paired with a guide dog. It's really neat when people can see the partnership of the person and the guide dog working together." Mary says she will always be grateful to GDB for supporting her journey and helping her do what she loves. The outdoors is for everybody, Mary says. Being able to hike again after losing my sight is phenomenal for my morale. I was so active before I lost my sight. It was important for me to have a dog with the drive and stamina to help me go out and do what I want. Thor has actually changed my life. This is from GDB's blog, No Bones About It, and it's titled, On the Trail Again. Our next reading comes from Life Magazine's book on cats, Companions in Life, and this area of the magazine is called Miracle Cats. This particular section is about Ron, the sick animal protector. One of four kittens born in a feral colony, an orange tabby named Ron, was adopted along with his siblings, Hermione, Luna, and Harry, by the Northfield Veterinary Hospital in Denver, Colorado. Before long, the kitten took an almost maternal interest in his littermates. He always groomed them, and the one time a dog got into my office, he pushed all his siblings behind him and puffed up to protect them. According to the hospital's manager and co-owner, Jen Weston, he was quite the hero. It wasn't long before Ron started befriending dogs, too, happily greeting new canine patients nose to nose. He even showed interest in an angry 20-pound cat that the vets couldn't handle. The owner warned us that he had been very difficult, Weston told People magazine. We usually lock Ronald up if we think his presence will be unwanted, but that particular day he escaped out of our hold. He went right up to the aggressive cat, and they became friends. Kitty was fine and easily managed after that. Before long, Ron was cuddling up to a dog named Fidget, who was recovering from dental work. Soon the tabby was regularly sharing his body heat with, and sometimes even grooming, unconscious animals during non-sterile procedures. We have taken many stray kittens throughout the years, and he is definitely an exceptional cat, said Weston, who posted images and video of Ron's unique behavior on Facebook. Almost overnight, animal owners started requesting the tabby's services, which ended after 3 months when Juan was adapted into a forever home. And now we turn to Midnight, the lifesaver. In May 1986, Benita Rogers of Leavenworth, Kansas, gave birth to a girl she and her husband, Roy, named Stacy. Though the infant was premature, she was healthy, which was nothing short of a miracle for the Rogers, whose three previous children had died at birth. I don't know what I could have put into words how long we waited and how special that made her, Bernita said. Bernita and Roy were very protective of Stacy. We constantly monitored her, said Roy. Even the family cat, a black tom named Midnight, whom the Rogers had adopted as a stray about a year before, seemed to watch over the child. He was always looking out for her, always in the room with her, Bernita said. The cat's attention paid off after Stacy came down with what seemed to be cold at the age of 6 weeks. Leaving nothing to chance, Bernita rushed the child to the doctor. He told me to just put on a humidifier in the room. Returning home, Bernita put Stacy down for a nap and went downstairs to join her parents, who were visiting from out of town. Before long, Midnight interrupted the conversation. The normally easygoing cat was strangely agitated. He came and he jumped into my lap, and he jumped up and down and back into my lap, Bernita said. He obviously wanted me to do something, but I really wasn't interested. Bernita shooed him away the cat, who ran upstairs to the baby's room. Soon afterward, the new mom and her parents heard Midnight making an eerie moaning sound on the baby monitor. It was frightening enough that I jumped out of the chair and ran upstairs. Arriving in the nursery, she found the cat screaming into the monitor. He was sort of leaning over the bassinet, Bernita said. I immediately looked at the baby, and she was gasping, and her color was blue. I thought I was going to lose her. Bernita rushed Stacy to the hospital, where the child went into full respiratory failure, the result of a viral infection. Eventually, she was resuscitated, but the real hero was Midnight. The cat actually saved the baby's life, Bernita said. For whatever reason, we were given a second chance by the help of our cat, Midnight, the lifesaver. Now here's a story about Tara, the attack cat. In May 2014, 4-year-old Jeremy Triantafilo was riding his trike in his family's driveway in Bakersfield, California, when the next-door neighbor's Labrador Chow mix, Scrappy, attacked him. Running toward the child's screams, his mother, Erica, saw the dog clamping Jeremy's leg in his jaws and shaking him viciously. The next thing I know, I see my cat flying out of nowhere onto this dog. Hurling herself at Scrappy, Tara chased the dog away before spinning around and returning to Jeremy's side. "She's a hero," the boy said. Later, the boy's father, Roger, watched the incident unfold on security camera video. It was pretty amazing to see just a cat take a dog on so selfishly, just put herself out there and not worry about what was going to happen to her, whether she was going to get bit or injured. I think that dog did not even know what hit him. After Roger uploaded the video to the YouTube, it became an internet sensation, attracting more than 16.8 million viewers within 48 hours. Though the boy's wounds required 10 stitches, he was otherwise unscathed, thanks to Tara, whom the Triantafilos had adopted 5 years earlier after she followed them home from a park. Had she ever shown signs of being a feline superhero before? Every once in a while, she puts our dogs back into their place, but for the most part, she's just the most mellow cat you've ever seen. According to Roger, Tara wanted to comment on this incident, but the cat got her tongue. This article, Tara, the Attack Cat, was found in Life magazine's book, Cats, Companions in Life. Well, that brings us to the conclusion of Animal Companions for today. I do hope you've enjoyed the readings, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Until then, this is Joyce for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.